Hello, and welcome to a new episode of OTT Talks. I'm Christina Bacalso, researcher on adolescence, youth, and policies, and OTT consultant. In today's episode, we will talk about how youth can shape and participate in politics and build change in the framework of International Youth Day with Ibrahim Farouk, Program Manager, Governance and Development at YAGA Africa, and active part of the Not Too Young to Run movement in Nigeria, and Naringa Tumenete, PhD researcher, director at Humanity Consulting, and member of the Pool of European Youth Researchers. So before we begin, I'd just like to say thank you to our guests for joining us today for the occasion of International Youth Day. I want to start our conversation with a challenging statement for our guests, and I want to know what you think about it. The statement is, policy decisions require experience. Young people need to gain that experience before pretending to shape policies. And I think the wording here is meant to be controversial, pretending to shape policies. Let's give the floor first to Ibrahim and then followed by Naringa.
Thank you very much and happy International Youth Day. And I'm really happy to be part of this conversation. I think just to start off, I'm going to say young people are definitely not pretenders. So we can shape policy actions. But I do agree, even though it's a controversial statement, I do agree that young people need some level of experience when it comes to shaping policy. We have a lot of energy and creativity and innovation, and sometimes that finds expression in many different ways. Some of this expression can be in form of protest or rallies, but that does not directly translate into policy making. And there's a certain level of experience that young people must garner and bring to the table in order to shape policy, the policymaking process from formulation to implementation. So are we pretenders? No, we're not, because our actions are able to shape policy. But must we gain some level of experience? Definitely.
Thank you. And Naringa, what do you think about that statement? Are youth pretenders? And also, do they need experience and where do they get it from?
Well, firstly, hi, Christina and everyone, and happy Youth Day as well. I would say that you have a consensus on this question. I completely agree with everything that Ibrahim has said. And perhaps I would add that requirement to have experience does not actually necessarily exclude young people, because sometimes they do have a lot of experience and often the advantage of actually understanding of the realities on the ground, as well as firsthand knowledge from their peers on the current realities.
Super. So what you're saying, if I hear you correctly, is that a lot of the experience that young people might have is not necessarily this kind of conventional experience that we would expect from people who are involved in policymaking, but rather coming from their lived experience, coming just from their own reflection with their peers. Do you agree with that, Ibrahim? Is that something that you see in your work, that young people come forward with their ideas and opinions really rooted in their own experience?
Definitely. But I think I'd like to add that for me, it's a bit of a mixture of both. From my experience, especially working with young people and also working with policymakers, is that there seems to be some sort of connection between young people who started off in some sort of leadership positions very early on. And this could be either in some sort of student union governments, for instance, while they were in the university or other tertiary institutions. And that provides an opportunity to learn and make policies. When I went to university, for instance, there were so many different positions, and there are young people who are in charge of sports, for instance, or in charge of student welfare, for instance, in charge of legislation that affected the student population, where there was a student parliament. And I think that was an opportunity to learn and to now take that experience and then translate it into a more broader, a bigger policymaking role. so to speak. So we have that, we have our lived experiences. And for me, I see many of the policies that are implemented affect us as younger people a lot more and would feel the effects for a longer period for our lives. So we have our lived experiences, but we also have some actual real world experience that we can bring to the table.
Great. And you mentioned there, you know, these examples of young people who are already getting involved in types of decision making, such as in their school councils or in education. Certainly, we see a lot of young people quite involved in terms of campus politics all around the world, campus movements. It's interesting, though, this idea of youth leadership. I would say, and I'm curious what Naringa thinks about this, in terms of the type of young people that we can kind of imagine involved in policy making are often these youth leaders, you know, these ones who are often well-spoken, they're often highly educated, they're at the forefront of maybe some of these public campaigns and highly organized campaigns. But what do we, you know, what do we see as the role of sort of the average young person on the street, you know, who perhaps is not necessarily that engaged in their campus politics or in these formal organizations? What is the role for them in policymaking, and how do we reach out to such young people who perhaps are not, you know, in these leadership roles? I'm curious, Naringa, what do you think about that?
Wow, that's a big question. And there's a lot of debate on what constitutes political engagement, right? Is it going on a protest? Is it leading a youth movement? Perhaps sometimes it is just making sure that young people go out to vote. Also, an interesting debate relates to collectivism. So, for example, social media activism that we see on Twitter, is that political engagement and youth leadership or not? But actually, we see that sometimes young people are very successful in organizing in those spaces as well, and actually drawing attention then of the media and afterwards by politicians to change policies and influence them. So I find it interesting that, yes, youth participate not only in this more typical and structured way in the policy and decision making, but sometimes creating their own way of participation. And then when we work on mainstreaming youth participation in policy and decision making, often we look at different structures and processes and how to improve them and how to increase the outreach, for example, to marginalized groups, to have more diverse groups of young people participating. But I think it's also important to note that sometimes we have to say, okay, perhaps this whole mechanism is not working, or this institution is not even working. So maybe it's fine to think of new ways of, you know, having the society function and cohabitate.
It's interesting because we're having this conversation about youth and now thinking about sort of different subgroups of youth. It brings up the question, you know, when it comes to policymaking, are we perhaps thinking about youth too much in a monolith? You know, is what are perhaps the advantages of this, of thinking of young people as having somewhat of maybe a common identity, common interests and common needs, which need to be reflected somehow in policymaking, which is, of course, meant for the wider public, not necessarily for individuals. But what are also maybe the dangers that we have of that, of assuming that, you know, perhaps there's one size fits all types of policy interventions for young people? Maybe Ibrahim, you have some insight about that from Nigeria or from other contexts.
I think that's a really interesting question, and it's great that you spoke about it, because even for the work that I do and working with different groups or categorizations of young people, it's very difficult to say that there's a common identity that runs through every young person. And we have various identity classifications, so to speak. However, I think that good policy making, as much as possible, takes into consideration various interest groups that this policy is going to affect one way or another. And I think it's imperative that policymakers are also able to consult with many different groups as much as possible in developing policies, in reviewing them, in policy implementation, as well. I've worked with the Ministry of Youth and Sports here in Nigeria, and especially on the national youth policy that we have. And one of the things that I'm happy about is that the policy recognizes that young people are not a homogeneous group. And therefore the policy tries to take into consideration many different groups of young people that we have, and their classifications for young people who are in school or in out of school, or young people who are in rural areas, or young people who are in urban areas. And I think this has improved the programming around young people that we have seen in our country. I know the earlier question was speaking a bit about how young people can participate. And we have many different ways. Many times we say social media is not the best way, but we've seen instances, and I have friends in South Africa who had a Fees Must Fall campaign, for instance. And a lot of conversation went on using the hashtag Fees Must Fall. And a lot of those conversations fed into some of the changes that were seen in the South African educational sector. In other places, we've seen where young people have organized offline and ensured that their voices are heard and their interests are taken into consideration. But I think you also made the point very clearly that there's a danger around fixating on youth. Even though we're such a huge demographic, I think we must also understand that there are also different interests in society that must also be satisfied.
I think that's a great bridge, actually, to my next question for Naringa is, you know, we all work with young people also on the topic of young people and public policies. Do you ever get the question, why youth? Why not? We heard about the national youth policy in Nigeria, but why not a national senior citizens policy? Why not other demographic groups? What's your answer to that, Naringa, when you get challenged with that?
It's quite a provocative angle. I would say it's important not to compete. When it comes to senior citizens, of course, there should be ways to include them as well. And I'm a big proponent of intergenerational dialogue as well, so kind of exchange and to fostering mutual understanding between groups. I think one of the kind of large issues that youth are advocating for is saying that a lot of the policies that we have now are outdated, not only when it comes to young people, but the society in general. And we see that in the policies that address climate crisis. So we see there's need for youth leadership and more open mind when it comes to that. So I guess this would be my answer on why youth, but definitely not excluding other groups.
How about you, Ibrahim? What do you answer when people ask you, why youth? Why not XYZ?
I think my first answer would be, why not? And for me, this is because young people are definitely the future, and we represent the future of any country. So there must be investments in young people to ensure that policy or legislation or practice affects young people positively and is able to develop young people positively. I think I made the point earlier is that just because there is some focus on young people, it does not totally remove the focus from other groups or other interests within society. And we must, while ensuring that young people are included, young people are represented, young people are able to participate, to also keep at the back of our mind that there are many other different groups that must also have their voices and have representation at the decision-making tables.
Great. We spoke a bit about this idea of intergenerational relationships or intergenerational connections, and I want to bring it to the topic specifically of think tanks. So sometimes when we think of think tanks, we can think of them as fairly formalized organizations full of tenured academics or other policy professionals. They create policy briefs, they make presentations to Senate, they go on CNN and give, all sorts of types of opinions or predictions of, you know, where our policy landscape is going. So within this kind of environment, where do we see the role of young people? So whether it's either as a type of research focus, right, when we think about what kind of policies we want to make that affect young people, or perhaps in the future, as Ibrahim had mentioned, or, you know, even in this idea of a young think tanker themselves, young people as researchers who could be involved in think tanks. How, you know, can we think of the role of perhaps the junior researcher, or maybe even a researcher who is in the beginning of their studies, who just happens to be policy interested? How do we engage these young people in these usually formalized organizations of think tanks? Maybe first to Nerenga and then Ibrahim.
Oh, that's a very important question, I think, and definitely not explored enough. So, for example, it's not something that you hear often discussed at the conferences where we try to tackle youth participation or even research. I thought, for example, youth partnership of the Council of Europe and the EU in the field of youth has done quite a good job in creating the pool of experts, where they invite both youth researchers that are youth and also youth researchers that are more senior in their life in terms of age, but young at heart, and sometimes putting them together, for example, to release joint publications. So you have this sort of organic exchange. And I definitely love the idea of think tanks. So use not only as someone to be consulted and, you know, to fill in surveys or attend focus group interviews, but also produce their own research. And for this, I think we all need not to only encourage young people to write this research, but also slowly shift the understanding of policymakers in what constitutes knowledge and what constitutes expertise to value this type of publications and research more.
Great. And so what I'm hearing is perhaps this idea of young people as policy entrepreneurs themselves, you know, this really driving the agenda setting for policy. What do you think, Ibrahim? What could be the role of young people or young emerging researchers in the formal role of think tanks?
So I think the role that young researchers can play is bringing a bit of context that young people actually live or experiences that young people actually have into policy making processes, and not to take away from the work that older policymakers or older researchers have done, but knowledge is dynamic and continues to improve. Even in my engagements, for instance, with young people, and there are a lot of conversations about different generations of youth. I wouldn't attempt to put myself in the shoes of a Generation Z and say that I understand their challenges or how they love to communicate. But I think as we start to bridge the gap a bit around youth policymaking and youth research, young policymakers, young researchers are able to bring some kind of dynamism, injects some kind of energy into research and policymaking that truly serves the needs of a youth population.
Super. Thank you so much, both. I think that that is the end of my questions. Thank you very much for joining this episode of OTT Talks. It was enjoyable and a very interesting conversation, especially for our historic International Youth Day. Thanks and see you soon.